Game on 2FM. With Green Firm. Healthy snacking made easy with Green Firm's high protein on the go range. Available in selected Tesco, Super Value and convenience stores nationwide.
Thanks to Jenny Green. It's Wednesday the 18th of November and this is Game On.
Coming up today, Stephen Ferris on the Irish team Andy Farrell has picked as he aims to avoid another defeat in England.
You can't make promises. You know, I've not got a crystal ball. But what I do know is that this is a different group and it's a different game at the weekend. You know, like you said, we've got new combinations all over the field that are coming together and learning from these type of experiences all the time. And you can't wait to get out there and show what they can do.
We're live to the Aviva Stadium as the depleted boys in green take on Bulgaria.
We've blooded a lot of players in the last couple of months, probably more than any time in recent history. And, you know, a lot of players are getting vital experience. And, you know, it's a great opportunity for some players against Bulgaria, and hopefully they can take.
We go behind the scenes at Lyon as a new film follows the Champions League winners.
To not be treated with respect and to not be treated as a professional is far worse than Adam not getting the same amount of money as Messi or Ronaldo. And that's the message that we have to send. And that's the only way football, women's football, will get to where it's supposed to get to.
Plus, we've a great giveaway for you, and Nadine Doherty and Aoife Murray draw breath as the Football and Camogie Championships reach the business end.
Game on 2FM.
You can text us on 51552 or tweet at GameOn2FM and we'd love to hear from you. And as you said, Marie, we do have a great giveaway. Tonight we have the chance for you to win as one with EA Sports and FIFA 21. Introducing more ways to play than ever before on the streets or in the stadiums. And to celebrate FIFA 21's release, we have another super prize for you. A copy of FIFA 21 plus a signed Irish soccer jersey. What about that, Marie, huh?
That is pretty cool. To be in with the chance to win, you just have to answer the following question. Who is the manager of the Republic of Ireland soccer team that play Bulgaria tonight? So text the word FIFA followed by your answer and name to 51552 and we'll pick a winner before the end of the show. And as always, RTE competition terms and conditions apply. So see 2fm.ie for more.
I think you could get your Christmas shopping done tonight. A signed Irish jersey, can't get it anywhere, and a FIFA game. There you go, get involved.
Happy days, that's what you want. So, Donegal, there was a team announcement today. Before we chat to Stephen Ferris, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I'm looking forward to chatting to Stephen about it. I think it's an informed team. I think there's brave calls, and I think Andy Farrell has, to be fair to him, since he's come in, he has, you know, he's done it his way. Normally you see a loyal group or you start backing on certain, now of course there's injuries and different things like that, but he has, I think, picked a good team and looking forward to picking through the bones of it with Stephen Ferris.
So brave call, you say, right? So when he's making those calls and certain players are getting dropped, we'll say like Conor Murray, does he give him the heads up beforehand or does he just sit in a room and you hear it?
No, you always tip someone off beforehand. And there is nothing worse than sitting in a team meeting. It actually happened to me. It happened to me it happened on a Lions tour. I subbed on a test one against South Africa in 2009 and Alan Wynne-Jones was left out of the squad. So when I was in the team meeting and I heard Simon Shaw starts at four, I was like, whoa, Shaw's he straight in. And in my head, I'm thinking, oh, that's a big jump for poor old Alan Wynne, you know, straight out of the squad. And then they call out replacement Alan Wynne-Jones. And I was there, and it's not a done thing. You always tip someone off beforehand. You explain it. You go with the reasons. You mightn't like it as a player, but what you appreciate is real honesty. And they're the tough conversations to have. You know, the brilliant conversations. That's why I'd never go into coaching. It's brilliant telling Gibson Park and Ross that they're starting this weekend, but it's the thorny conversations with people. The one that always stands out with me was Eddie O'Sullivan, and I remember him just being really honest. He was there, I'm going with Malcolm O'Kelly. I can give you four or five different reasons why you're not playing, but I would just be nearly making them up. It's a 50-50 call at the moment, but I'm being loyal to Mal and just get on with it. And I remember I was there, thanks a million, Eddie, talk to you.
Fair enough. Well, yeah. Stephen Ferris is on the line. So Stephen, did you ever get cruelly dropped and were seriously disappointed?
Yeah, it's funny Donegan mentioned Eddie O'Sullivan, like, because it was exactly the same for me in the 2007 World Cup. And, you know, the lads weren't playing particularly well, and I was banging on the door saying, you know, what all do I have to do, Eddie, to get a starting place? And I remember him pulling me to the side and saying, Stevie, look, I've backed this team for the first couple of games. They haven't really played that well. Unless there's an injury or somebody goes down with sickness or something, you're not going to get a chance in these warm-up games, because I'm just going to have to keep backing myself. And I said, Eddie, no problem. I really appreciate that. Thanks for being honest with me. I'll just keep the head down and prepare as best as I can to help the team. And that's the way I went about it. And, you know, I didn't get any game time in that World Cup, but, you know, I think players prefer that honesty, as Donica talked about.
Yeah, and I think we see it this weekend. Obviously, Ross and Bundiaki come in for the injured, Johnny Sexton, Robbie Henshaw, but Keith Earls comes in ahead of Andrew Conway, and the one I'd be interested in your take, CJ Sandler coming in for Josh van der Fleer. A shake-up in the back row, Fez.
Yeah, it's a shake-up, and it's interesting, like, you know, it's different combinations, and I think that's why everybody's looking forward to this match. You know, Pete plays in the 7 jersey. Peter won his first cap with me in the 7 jersey playing against Italy. And, you know, he's back there. He's really good over the ball. You know, he's not the type of guy to go around chopping lads like Will Connors and Josh van der Fleer, but he is a bit of a nuisance. So, you know, him playing in that 7 jersey, he is also a big enough man too. And with Doris playing really good rugby, he's playing out of his skin at the minute, and CJ Stander was one of the most consistent players in the Six Nations. So you would have definitely said that Doris and Stander would have started, and that 7 jersey was up for grabs, but he's went for the bigger man and Peter O'Mahony to fill that jersey this weekend. And it's a combination I'm certainly looking forward to, as is Bundiaki and Chris Farrell in the centre, you know.
Fez, the Ulster man inside you, Jacob Stockdale, Ian Henderson starting on the bench. You mentioned the bigger man there. Would Ian Henderson in the back row, especially when a game like this where we know there's going to be incredible physicality, you know, he still gives you a line-out option. Were you disappointed to see them, or can you understand the rationale?
Oh, sure, there's no Ulster man in the starting 15, Donegan. It's like the old days. Like, I'm joking, of course. Obviously, Jacob Stockdale has been... you know, you talk about Doris being consistent. You know, Jacob's been very inconsistent. We all know what he's capable of. You know, 2018 Grand Slam, chip kicks, scoring tries for fun. And he's back onto the bench. I believe he was struggling with a little bit of a calf niggle there last week. So that's maybe why he hasn't trained as fully as other lads. And it's the same with Ian Henderson. I think he had a bit of sickness, so that's maybe why he's on the bench. But it's good to have that cover there. Ian Henderson's a huge man. Him and, you know, Quinn Roo would be some par in the scrum in the second half if needs be. But yeah, it's brilliant to see that Ireland can now call upon some of these lads on the bench. And it almost feels, Donegan and Marie, that we have a bit more strength and depth. And I think that's just because Andy Farrell's given other lads opportunity that's kind of breeding, you know, these other lads into the team.
Rory O'Connor from the Indo tweeted a little bit earlier. He said, it's pretty remarkable that a third of Ireland's starting team for Twickenham qualified through the residency rule. Bundiaki, James Lowe, Jemison Gibson-Park, CJ Stander and Quinn Roo. Is that the most that there's ever been?
Geez, I don't know. I'm not 100% sure on that, but it's obviously not where you want Ireland to be. Of course it's not. But these guys, this isn't their fault. James Lowe has spent his time here in Ireland, as has the other guys, and they thoroughly deserve to take the pitch for Ireland and represent Ireland, and I'm sure they'll do that with everything that they've got. And, you know, it was talked about with other players like CJ Stander over the last couple of years. And, you know, he's obviously from South Africa. And, you know, the end game and the end goal is, of course, for 15 guys born and bred in Ireland to go out and represent Ireland. Of course that is, or 23 men. And I know Leo Cullen at Leinster, that's what he's trying to do there, is have 23 guys that are born and bred from Leinster representing Leinster week in, week out. But it's tough to get to that. And, you know, you even look at the game last week, who were the outstanding players? It probably was three of those five that you mentioned, and Quinn Roo, and Jameson Gibson-Park and James Lowe. So, you can't fault the guys, but maybe the system going forward still needs to be looked at.
Stephen, I'm interested, especially for me, Quinn Roo. I think, you know, I looked at a few games back to look at parts of James Ryan's game, and all I kept seeing was Quinn Roo. His work rate, his physicality, and when you're going to a game against England and you know it's going to be physical, he's the perfect person for it. Andy Farrell was asked about the physicality today, and here's what he had to say.
There's a reason why teams can be physical, you know. Teams that are physical tend to have a flow to their gameplay in the right parts of the field. We know that England's game is very much a territory based game, and they try and force errors upon you, and obviously play in your half. We weren't able to be physical in our game because in the last outing there at Twickenham, because they harassed us in many areas really, and we were quite clinical enough in our exiting, in our set piece, etc. And when things start to go wrong like that, the other team tends to get an opportunity to be physical. You know, if things start going our way and we are able to play on the front foot, I've absolutely no doubt that we'll be physical back at them.
Stephen, we know what's coming. It's come for the last three games. They look to dominate. They look to win the physical battles. It's going to be no different this weekend.
No, certainly not. And you know, Donegal, we both know that you know, if you win the gain line and you know the tackle on both sides of the ball, it goes a long way to winning the match, doesn't it? And if Ireland's set piece can perform at a similar level as it did last week, I don't think, you know, like the Welsh scrum folded last week against Ireland, I'm not sure that the English scrum's going to do that this weekend. But if they can get parity in set piece, they're creating plenty of chances. They still created lots of chances in that Six Nations match against France away from home. Granted, they made a hell of a lot of errors as well. But yeah, they play in the right areas of the pitch. They're clinical when they get their chances, and they need to stand up and be counted. And you know, James Ryan, I'm sure you might touch on that, Donica Marie, about, you know, the leadership that he brings and the physicality that he brings. He'll certainly be leading from the front wearing the captain's armband, and that's another exciting piece of the puzzle that I'm looking forward to seeing this weekend.
CJ Stander was asked quite an interesting question in a press conference over the last couple of days. A quote from Razzy Erasmus was put to him from the documentary that he made on the South Africa winning the World Cup, and he said, he was talking about Wales ahead of the semi-final, and he said, they're softies, they're not softies, they're not like Ireland. Is that a perception or of Ireland, do you think, now?
Oh, no, definitely not. Definitely not. There's been too many players have played against Irish sides and, you know, have come out second best at times. And, you know, Razzy Erasmus is the master of mind games, and watching some of the highlights and clips from, I think it's called The Rising Sun, that documentary, you can totally see where Razzy Erasmus is coming from. He's a great motivator. He's brilliant at, obviously, tactically, he's very good as well. But I just think he's very smart and cute with the words that he uses to get under other team skins. And, you know, I definitely don't think Ireland are soft, and I definitely don't think that deep down Razzy Erasmus thinks they're soft.
Yeah, I agree with you. You speak of motivators there. We know Andy Farrell is a massive presence in the room, but you mentioned it. James Ryan as captain. Here's what he had to say about James today.
Well, I've 100% seen a curiosity in James over the last 9 months of him maturing regarding his leadership's concerned. I think over the last couple of years, everyone's talked about James being a potential leader for this team, a potential captain for this team. And I saw something 9 months ago when we went into the Six Nations, the start of the Six Nations, where he actually started to think probably that while people are talking about me in this vein, maybe I should start doing something about it. And he has 100% come to the fore in his curiousness of how he wants to lead, etc. And I've been super impressed over the last 9 months of how he handles himself first and foremost, and how he interacts and thinks about others as well.
Tonica, Keith Earls said that he has a lot of similarities to Paul O'Connell. What do you think?
Yeah, I was going through different captains you would have had, and always kind of touching on Paulie's ones, it's hard to describe. You know that thing that's often said, X factor, or, you know, it's hard to put your finger on what it has. What James Ryan has, he's inspirational in the way he plays. So you follow him, and Stephen will tell you more than anything, in rugby that really matters, because it's so physical, it's so attritional. You need someone that actually just goes out and grabs it by the scruff of the neck. When I think of Brian O'Driscoll, he always involved different people in his leadership, and it was a brilliant style. You know, I remember there might be a conversation coming off a training pitch, and I might say something about the importance of a breakdown, and Drico would force me to say it in a team meeting. Rory had a different type of style, but I'd agree with Keith Earls. It's hard to put your finger on what James Ryan has at the moment. It's very like Paul O'Connell, but what I would hate, and Stephen, you probably have a bit of insight in it, is that he tried to replicate someone else. He's been around the likes of Rory Best, Paul O'Connell, Brian O'Driscoll.
Yeah.
He needs to do it his way.
Yeah, he certainly does. And you know, some of the best played with never said a peep in the changing room beforehand. The likes of David Wallace, who didn't open his mouth at all before matches. Just, you know, you followed him because he was such an inspirational player on the pitch. But to be a captain of your country, you need more than that, and I think the big man really has that. And you know, maybe it's taken him a while for him to realise that he is the future captain of Ireland. He can be the future captain of Ireland, and that's just a little bit of self belief as well. And it's really interesting to hear Andy Farrell's words there, that you know, he has taken on board what has happened over the last while and has maybe realised himself that I can do this. And that's exciting.
Yeah, it certainly is. Stephen, the big areas for me, and you'll get no surprise from it, the scrum, Twickenham, when it comes to the scrum, we've both been there when it's been on rollerblades and the crowd goes crazy. They're not going to be there now. But they do grow a foot, and that is an area they'll target. I also think they will target our 9 and 10 and our 15.
Yeah, like the world witnessed South Africa take England to the cleaners at scrum time in the Rugby World Cup final in 2019. And when you try and take that power game away from England, you know, they do stutter at times, but that's easier said than done. You know, this English side, generally 99% of the games that they play will have parity, if not more, in set piece and specifically scrum time. You and I have been there. That was my last international, Donegal, back in 2012, I think, when we were on roller skates and, you know, we couldn't get a foothold in the game whatsoever. So, yeah, it's a big talking point getting into this match. Even listening to Ellis Genge after the big victory against Georgia, he was talking about how well the Ireland scrum performed against Wales and that they're going to be ready for it. So, you know, even 24 hours after their game, they're already concentrating on what Ireland's going to bring to the table this weekend. So yeah, it's a huge aspect of the game, and if they can get Jameson Gibson Park and Ross Byrne clean ball, and it's going to make their lives a hell of a lot easier as well. So yeah, massive, Donegal, absolutely massive, and as I referred back to there, the World Cup final, it can really decide big games.
Do you think that they are the right combination at 9 and 10?
Yeah, like, again, James Gibson Park in form, like the pace that he brought to the game against Wales, you know, there's no messing about it. It's get the ball away. And the only thing is, you know, what's the talking points behind Johnny Sexton? You know, there's four or five names that you can list off that, in my opinion, are all of a similar ability. And, you know, it could easily have been, you know, Burns this weekend. I've watched Harry Burns so much over the last number of weeks. He's certainly in the mix going forward over the next year or two. And we know Carberry's injured. And then you look at Connacht, you've young Conor Fitzgerald, you've Jack Carty. But who's next? Who's going to fill Johnny Sexton's boots when he's not there? And that's where we need to get to. And I think this is a huge game for Ross Byrne, because he was... he started the last game against England when they lost 57 points just before the World Cup final, or the World Cup kicked off in Japan in 2019. So for me, this is a huge game for him, and we'll see what he's really made of.
Well, he needs to show a ruthless side now, Stephen, doesn't he? Like, opportunities, you're right, are limited, especially when you're sitting behind Johnny Sexton, you know, one of the, you know, best players at that position. He has to take this opportunity and really put the pressure on.
He has to. But he'll only be able to take that opportunity, Donegal, if the pack front up. Like, you know, if the pack are on the back foot all day long, his job is going to be really, really difficult. He's got to kick smart. He's got to kick his goal. So we all watched last week when Ireland kept knocking the 3 points over and keeping the scoreboard ticking. That's what he's got to do. He's got to nail those 3-pointers. And he's definitely got the ability to do it. We've all witnessed, you know, Ross playing some fantastic rugby for Leinster over the last few years. So, yeah, big boots to fill, but he has to take this chance, because if he doesn't, then, you know, Burns will be breathing down his neck for the following week against Georgia, of course.
Okay, Stephen, thanks so much. We know we can catch you on RT1 covering the match on Saturday. Best of luck with it, and thanks for joining us on Game On.
Thanks, Stephen.
Thanks, Mel.
Before we take a break, Donegal, I have an interesting question for you. We're always talking about nicknames. I heard you calling Stephen Ferris Fez there. Jemison Gibson Park, a lot of potential there for nicknames.
Yeah, there is. Jeannie, where do you start?
There's your homework now. Find out what his nickname
It'll
is.
It'll be something really boring.
Park. Right, well, you can find out.
5.2 if you can come up with something.
Well, let's take a quick break.
Game on 2FM with Green Fern. Green Fern's new on-the-go chicken bites are natural, high in protein, and packed with flavour.
Game on 2FM.
Now, I found that during lockdown, there is nothing better than a good sports documentary. It's great escapism, and also there are crowds at games. So I was pretty thrilled when I heard about The Squad. It's a behind-the-scenes documentary featuring Olympique Lyonnais, one of the best soccer teams in the world. It captures the highs and lows of pro sport. It has brilliant characters, personality, and most importantly, it shines a light on the women's game. I'm delighted to say that the director, Stephanie Gillar, is on the line. Stephanie, what a fantastic idea, I have to say, to feature Lyon, as we all know them. Such an amazing team, and you got brilliant access as well, which is the most important thing, really.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, it was an opportunity that you can't refuse. When the president of Olympique Lyonnais said okay to the project of the documentary, it was obvious that we would make it.
The president of Lyon, everybody speaks about him so highly, and the girls in the film as well, that he just backed them. He shows them the respect that they often have to go and try and fight for. And how important is it to have somebody like that behind the scenes?
It shows that it's sometimes for women's sports, the usual criticism is about money, you know, like there is not enough money. No. To me, it shows that it's not a matter of money, it's a matter of choice. It's a matter of the choice of where you spend your money. There are many big clubs that have a lot of money, more money than Lyon, and they don't spend as much money for their women's team.
Everyone thinks professional sports people are money. That's the driver. That's not the drive for this team. It is the respect and to inspire a next generation.
It is something that the girls from the team, and I'm sure you can find that in the girls from in the girls with the girls of other teams around the world. They all have this fight in common. It's so difficult for a girl to decide to play football and to become a professional than that to them, the more important it's just to be respected as a footballer, simply. It's more than a matter of money. It's really to be considered as a professional footballer.
And it was simple things as well, Stephanie, that they were looking for. It was like medical, you know, just to have facilities, mm-hmm. just to be fed after training. You know, they weren't looking to be paid. They weren't like Ada Hedeberg wasn't looking to be paid the same as Lionel Messi, even though they're on par. It's just that they get looked after so that they can do their jobs to the best of their ability. And that came across so clear. I mean, I don't know what people thought of facilities that women's sport had. I mean, the facilities we saw that Lyon had in their own ground were really good. But when they went out and about to other clubs, you could see that the facilities weren't up to scratch or they weren't anywhere near. And that's good to see, because you don't always understand, I think, until you actually see it, that it is a challenging environment for women's sport. And that came across really well.
Yeah, thank you very much. Yeah. I discovered it too, because I had no, I was not aware of that difference of treatment between men's football and women's football. And when you realize the difference of the locker room in the stadium, the difference of the medical around the staff and of various teams, it's really quite impressive to realize that.
Stephanie, despite the difference in facilities, it's amazing to see the dressing room is the same. It is the same characteristics to any dressing room. There's the senior players looking out for the younger players. There's competition at every training session. And the bit I found quite amusing, always the most talented players complaining about being tired.
Yeah. When I started to make the movie, my producer was always asking me questions about the feminist part of the subject of the film, and I had to think about it. And so when I was making the film, quite soon I realized that the most feministic way to do it was to film this team like I would film a men's team. So it was my way of seeing them. I was seeing them just as they were a men's team. So it's normal that you get the same thing as in any team, in any sport, like the old ones, the young ones, how they take care of each other, and things like that. And for the part about complaining of being tired, they always say that they are so lucky to be professional in that sport that they don't really want to complain, because most of them, when they started, a professional football didn't exist. So for them, it's just like marvelous to play every day, and it is your job, and you are paid for that.
They were so open with you as well, although a couple of them did say some of the stories that they'd prefer not to say them on air, but most of them were pretty open. Jessica Fishlock talking about Wales and just the lack of professionalism there, and the fact that they'd only had two senior coaches, and how a previous manager used to just fly in on the day of the game and fly out again, and they'd be working with somebody else. And also Wendy Raynard recalling the time when the male team were promised Volkswagen Beetles if they won a title, and the women asked for the same treatment and they got figurines instead. And those stories, like, again, I think until you hear the players actually speak about them and just see what it means to them on their faces, that you don't really understand how difficult and frustrating it must be knowing the effort that you put in. And again, like, there are things that, okay, Volkswagen Beetles is a big thing, but, you know, even just to get a coach, like to have a coach for a national team, you would think it's nearly a prerequisite when you're going playing football.
Well, to me also, it's really funny when they go to play against Chelsea for the semi-final in the Champions League, and they don't play in the Chelsea Stadium. You know, it's once again, it's the matter. The question is where you decide to spend your money and what respect and what credit you give to women's teams.
Stephanie, what I found really interesting was the pressure of success as well. For this team, they have been successful. They now do have crowds, good sponsors, you know, they are. But the senior players realising the responsibility and passing that on to the younger generation, nearly saying that they would like to move on and leave it in a better place.
It was really my interest to show that. And I'm pretty sure that what's going between those two generations in that team is probably what makes them strong, because the old ones really want the young ones to be aware of the past of women's football. And I remember Camille Abidit told me, we don't want the young ones to be a princess. So they... Because Camille Abidi now is training the young ones at Lyon, and she said no, they shouldn't be princess. They have to struggle like we did. So okay, the struggles won't be the same because now you have a professional football, but they have to understand and to be aware and to carry that story, that history with them, because it will make them stronger. And I think it's really interesting. We always say that you are stronger knowing from where you come from, and it's probably a way of doing it in a team, in a football team.
Well, you definitely captured all of that, Stephanie. It's a really, really important story and so well told. And they're a fantastic team. And I know we've all loved watching them over the last few years. And no doubt we'll be watching them for many, many more. Stephanie Gillard, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Game on 2FM.
And if you want to check out The Squad, it is screening as part of the IFI French Film Festival from now until 10 p.m. this Saturday on ifihome.ie. We are going to take a quick break and then we're going straight to the Aviva Stadium where John Kenny has some team news for us.
Game on 2FM with Green Fern. Healthy snacking made easy with Green Fern's high protein on the go range. Available in selected Tesco, Super Value and convenience stores.
Game on 2FM.
Now, welcome back. I think it's fair to say that Ireland's game against Bulgaria does feel like a must-win game at this stage, but I think we'd probably all settle for a game with some goals. We are going to cross over to John Kenny at the Aviva very, very shortly for some team news. But first, Mark Langdon from the Racing Post joins us. Mark, I want to get into the other Nations League games as well, but I want to start first with Mo Salah. He has tested positive again for COVID-19 and is self-isolating. Have you any idea when he's going to be back?
No. That is the question, of course, on all Liverpool fans' lips. I mean, obviously, the Leicester game and the Atalanta one in the Champions League, no chance of those. Even the game after now sort of feels like a doubt, for that. And so he's been heavily criticised, actually, Mohamed Salah, by a former Egyptian Premier League star in the striker Mido, who, of course, played for Tottenham among many other clubs. He felt and has publicly come out and said that, just absolutely wrong of Salah to be at his brother's wedding, and that he wanted the Egyptian FA to come down hard on Mohamed Salah, which I don't think there's any chance of that happening whatsoever. The latest problem, isn't it, for Liverpool in what has been a very turbulent campaign so far.
Just on the international break, Mark, I think we're missing 14 players are unavailable. But just for the Premiership managers, it must be a nightmare to see all these players go out and pick up knocks. And I know Mo Salah is different, but it hasn't been great for the players.
No, it definitely hasn't. I mean, you've obviously got the COVID situation right at the forefront, but there is another issue, and that's player welfare in terms of injuries. And with the Championship, League One and League Two moving to five substitutions, I think it's basically the Premier League on its own of sort of the big leagues that refuses to go to five subs, and that is definitely impacting, I think, on player fatigue and the amount of injuries that are being picked up. I mean, it's unprecedented that what's gone on this summer in terms of, no pre-season, back-to-back games, sort of absolutely relentless schedule, and then chucking in three international matches into a short space of time as well. I think people will look back on this period and won't come out of it sort of in shining glory, because in my opinion the players are being asked to do a little bit too much now, and it's a little bit ridiculous, really.
Well, it is also unprecedented that the Republic of Ireland manager would have 14 players unavailable, so let's cross over to John Kenny at the Aviva Stadium to see who he has chosen for his starting 11. John?
Yeah, without doubt, as a mission tonight for the game against Bulgaria, a total of 14 players now missing from the original squad by Stephen Kenny for the England friendly and the two Nations League games. So tonight he's given a debut to 24-year-old Swansea player Ryan Manning. He's coming in at left back. First competitive starts for Portsmouth's Ronan Curtis and Derby County's Jason Knight. The 19-year-old ex of Cabinteely earns his third cap. Robbie Brady, the most capped player starting tonight, is earning his 54th. So the team is Darren Randolph in goal. Dara O'Shea switches from left to right back alongside Shane Duffy, Keith Long and Ryan Manning. Jason Knight and Robbie Brady, with Conor Hourihan in the middle of that three, with Daryl Horgan on the right, Ronan Curtis on the left, and James Collins of Luton Town earning a sixth cap tonight in the middle. And hopefully goal or two tonight. Bulgaria themselves without three players, their goalkeeper Histan Vasiliev, their left back Dietmar Volovsky, and their captain Vasil Bozikov all return positive samples for coronavirus, and they pulled out of the squad. Far from formidable opponent tonight. 1-1 draw in Sofia, the only point they secured in the group. Of course, we've only got two, so only a win can get Bulgaria off the bottom tonight, because Ireland have a better goal difference. So they come to Dublin knowing their task, and that is to win here. But hopefully Ireland can get amongst the goals tonight. We could do it one or two in front of an empty Aviva Stadium. It's a 7:45 start here, Marie.
So those goals, we see Horgan, Collins and Curtis. John, if you were to predict, do you think they're going to come?
It's hard to know, isn't it? It's just to get somebody in the back of the ball, in the back of the net. You know, Troy Parrott's up on the under-21s. He might be an option later on. I believe they beat Luxembourg 2-1 tonight. You've also got the Shamrock Rovers trio of Graham Burke, Aaron McAniff and Jack Byrne. Now, Jack Byrne obviously gave the ball away that led to Jeff Hendry being sent off the other night. So it's hard to know. You had 14 players missing from your original squad, you know. But I tell you what, they'll take a goal from Darren Randolph at this stage.
Absolutely. And even Shane Duffy, look, it's, I think everybody has been putting the spotlight on him and his performances, but he is in there, and he is someone that is well able to get on the end of a set piece. And, you know, when you look at that team, you wouldn't be surprised if it is him that does go out and get it.
Yeah, he seems to be lacking a lot of confidence recently. We know his father passed away recently, and he's had a move to Celtic as well, which may have disrupted him. But he's a wholehearted player. We know that, Shane Duffy. The Irish captain as well, and he really puts his body on the line at times, you know, guilty of one or two mistakes, but that's the way it goes. But yeah, if somebody's got to score from a set piece, it would be Shane Duffy, maybe a Keith Long header as well. But look, let's hope the front three can get firing tonight. Daryl Horgan's actually impressed since he's played in the last couple of games, and I thought he did well against Wales, and hopefully he can supply something tonight and get us at least on the score sheet. We're just praying for a goal.
Well, he's definitely taken his opportunity, and as has Robbie Brady. And I think a lot of Irish football fans now are really happy to see him back in that starting position, and seems to be responding pretty well to Stephen Kenny.
Yeah, I think so. And Brady is obviously one of those players as well who can supply that dead ball for the likes of Shane Duffy as well. So, you know, a lot of onus will be on him tonight. And he is a player like Jack Byrne as well who can take on defences and have a go. And obviously this new style of play that Stephen Kenny is trying to engender on his team, I think Brady would be part and parcel of that, because of the style of play that he can bring to this side. You know, Ronan Curtis has been around the League of Ireland as well with Derry City. Ryan Manning, ex of Galway United. Jason Knight, ex of Cabinteely. Shows this, as I said before, three Shamrock Rovers players, current Shamrock Rovers players, on the bench tonight. Aaron McAniff, ex of Derry City as well. So he's picking and choosing teams, players that used to be in the League of Ireland, which he knows so well. But with the 14 players missing, it really is hard to know how they're going to get on tonight. Bulgaria aren't great, we know that as well, and they've got their own injury problems and COVID problems as well. Just win 1-0, that'll do.
John Kenny, thanks. I don't know if I will ever get used to hearing you coming from an empty Aviva stadium.
There'll be a cheer if a goal goes in, surely.
I'll be the only one cheering, I think.
Thanks, John. We'll talk to you soon. Marco, COVID, we just can't seem to get away from it. And even if you look at that Bulgaria team as well, like, they've been hit by it. And so have so many of the European teams. I know you mentioned that it is unfair on the players, but is it going to continue, do you think, until a vaccine comes in? Or is there any plans to maybe halt these international breaks?
No, I don't think there's any plans to halt the international breaks. I mean, the simple facts of it are that, you know, the countries and associations need the money, and you know, if they don't play, they risk sort of breaking TV contracts, and you know, they're as desperate as the clubs to at least appease you know, the media rights and sort of to bring some money in, that they of course missed a load of games you know, when the season and sort of basically the world locked down sort of early part of this year. So no, there's no plans for that. But you're absolutely right about the way that it's causing havoc. I mean, Norway were unable to fulfil a fixture against Romania at the weekend. They've playing a B team for tonight's game, because none of those that were sort of in the squad were allowed to play in the game tonight, which is in itself a really just a farcical situation that has developed, where and Ireland had this issue where you're playing a massive game that decides European Championship sort of participation and semi-finals in a big playoff, and then right on the eve of it, players that you expected to be available and not, and it doesn't feel right. I understand why the show must go on. We've seen Roberto Mancini, the Italian manager, he's been self-isolating, so he's not been at any of the games that Italy have been playing. It's not a great look, really, for international football, and I suppose a problem on the horizon is going to be that this backlog caused by COVID, the European Championship next summer, I don't think that's going to be a particularly pretty tournament. The players likely to be exhausted, and it's just going to be a sort of survival of the fittest, really. I mean, international tournaments have not been that great recently anyway because of the demands on players, and it's only going to be worse come the summer. So it could just be a case of, whoever of the big team sort of, is able to field a decent 11, and that doesn't feel right.
Mark, survival of the fittest, and it has been negative, but there has been a positive with Scotland making the championships.
Yeah, absolutely, and actually I thought they played really well against Serbia for the first 90 minutes. They were holding on definitely, when it came to extra time, and obviously penalties, did well again, having won on the semi-final from that. But I think from where they were a year ago to where they are now, that they've taken some big steps forward. Steve Clarke he had to ride the storm, that initial storm, and maybe for Irish football fans that, Stephen Kenny's not started that well, I think you have to be patient and allow the manager time to sort of develop what he wants. And Steve Clarke was able to do that, and, the end results have been very positive for Scotland. And they've got some talented players when you actually kind of look at it. John McGinn does very well in the Premier League, and McGregor, I think, is a good player in midfield. Also, even up front, somebody like Dykes has, and this is maybe what Ireland need, Dykes has come in and just sort of added a new dynamism to that attack, really. And having that threat up front, even if he's not scoring but causing problems for the opposition, just allows space for some of, maybe the more talented midfielders to then, work their bit of magic, if it's a Christie or somebody like that. So Scotland have come a long way under Steve Clarke, for sure.
Mark, thanks so much for joining us on Game On. We'll catch up with you soon. Quick break, and we're back chatting Camogie and football.
Game On 2FM with Green Fern. Snack smart with Green Fern's new high-protein snacking range, available in selected Tesco, Super Value and convenience stores nationwide.
Game On 2FM.
Hello, welcome back. The Ladies Football Championships are motoring along nicely. We have our senior semi-finalists. Dublin will face Armagh on November 28th and Cork will play Galway on December 6th. To go through all the weekend's action, we are joined by Nadine Doherty. Nadine, before I get into it, I just want to raise something that came up over the last 24 hours or so. The LGFA have rearranged their All-Ireland senior semi-final clash between Cork and Galway to avoid a clash for the Cork dual players, and I think they should be commended for this because it is progress.
Yeah, they definitely should be commended. I agree with you, Marie, but I mean, it has taken a long time. It's just a bit of a gesture, and I think Aoife will agree when you're chatting to her later, that I just, something concrete has to be done, and I think both associations need to really sit down sooner rather than later and sort it out, not on a match-to-match basis, but just have some kind of concrete objective that this stops happening, because it's not fair on the dual players, and I just don't think it's fair on Camogie or ladies football in general or anybody involved, and it's a bit embarrassing because it doesn't happen on the men's side of the game, and I really don't think it should happen on ours.
Well, hopefully it is the start of something anyway, and that maybe next season things will improve, but who knows. So I'm going to go through the games very quickly at the weekend. Well, I suppose just to look at the final four first, Mayo aren't there. They were shocked by Armagh, I think it's fair to say, and I just have two words for you, Amy Mackin.
Ah, staff. I mean, look, what a performance. to focus on the positives for Armagh. They were hungry, they were focused, they worked as a unit, they trusted each other, and they trusted the plan. It was really obvious. And as you just said, Marie, and we've said it before in this game, when you have Amy Mackin in your team, you're always in with a chance, you know. I mean, she was absolutely unbelievable. Per Diane Caldwell, you know, she had a day that she'll really want to forget. And just to highlight Amy Mackin's point, I think it just summed up her whole performance. She hit it with the outside of her left boot from the right-hand side of the pitch at full tilt. Defenders hanging off her. Just absolutely genius. But look, Armagh's unit, they were amazing, as we said. Caroline O'Hanlon, who we always mentioned, while she admitted herself she had a quiet game, but I mean, those last 10 minutes, she came out to the middle of the pitch. She was a calm and influence. She was fantastic. Blondin Mackin, Amy's sister, was also amazing. And I just thought Kelly Mallon, who mightn't get too many plaudits, I think physically she caused Mayo massive problems. I was really stunned, to be honest, that Mayo didn't make any changes and afforded that full back line a bit of protection. I just thought overall Mayo, as you said, they were just lacking in every department. Decision making poor. You know, we spoke about that with the Tyrone game. Their conversion rate was poor. And, you know, individuals, I mean, where was Sarah Rowe? 2-9 against Tyrone. We barely saw her. It was just disappointing for Mayo, and we expected a lot more. But look, fair play to Armagh. They were absolutely brilliant, and full credit to them and their sideline. Fantastic.
Cork got the job done very, very convincingly over Cavan, but I think the game of the weekend for me was Galway-Monaghan. It was just so close at the end, and I think Monaghan are going to be rueing those last few minutes. They had so many chances, but Galway really dug deep with just 14 players.
They did. You know, they were given the fright of their lives by a Monaghan team who, like Armagh, if they backed themselves, they really did. Huge respect for Manon, because they came back to the table this year and they said, you know what, we are one of the top teams in the country and we want to get back to that top four. Galway, look, I just felt they played in fits and bursts. Yeah, they were down to 14, but it really came into play in that last 10 minutes. I just looked at Galway and I was puzzled by what they were doing. They were trying to play possession football defensively. They had 14 players. It's a heavy pitch. Probably not the same fitness levels as last year. And time again, they just kept playing themselves into trouble. They got away with murder in the last minute when Ellen McCarron was gifted with that opportunity that had she taken her points, you know, could have forced extra time. But, you know, Ellen put in a fantastic performance. She set up the goal that was the catalyst for the comeback. She scored two goals herself. But yeah, Galway, look, a lot of work to do for me. A lot of work to do. I'm just not fully convinced yet. But look, they have 2 weeks to knuckle down.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Thanks, Nadine. And we have 2 weeks to be talking about those semi-finals as well. I think they're going to be absolute crackers. Thanks, Nadine. And now, I said that the ladies' football was motoring along. Well, the Camogie are motoring along as well. And Cork in particular, Aoife Murray, look like they're going along nicely as well. They defeated Clare, although Clare did put up a really strong challenge.
Yeah, I think, and I think if you look at the score, I don't think it really reflects the game. You know, 315 to 8 points. If you just looked at it on a scoreboard, you would think that Cork ran away with the game. But there was something about Clare, I think, on Saturday that was, there were so many positives to take, not just for Clare, but for Camogie in general, Marie. I think there was a serious purpose about their game. They were so confident with the ball. They were making the right decisions. Obviously, the last quarter, I think the legs just gave in a small bit and decision-making wasn't great and passes weren't sticking like they were for the rest of the game. But I think as games go for Cork, looking at the semi-final, it was a brilliant test for them. And for me, there was an awful lot of positives for Cork. I think, look, their work on the puck-outs were excellent. I think they dominated players and dominated their own puck-outs, which is what you want. Always options for Amy Lee, which is what you want. And I think, look, Orla Cronin, it was just a joy to watch her on Saturday. The movement that she was making, I don't think Clare, unfortunately, just didn't have an answer for her. And I think they needed to make a change a little bit sooner. But certainly, I think it was a great game for Cork, and I think they'll be delighted with the workout.
Yeah, and I think Tip will probably feel the same as well, because it was a really good test. And in this stage of the championship, that's what you want.
Yeah, and look, two different types of games. You know, I thought the Clare and Cork game was very entertaining and it was really good to watch. Waterford and Tip was a little bit more frustrating. Now, in fairness, I think a lot of people said that Waterford just didn't come to the pace of the game at all, but you can counter that by saying I think Tip didn't let them. Their work rate, their commitment to each other and to the ball was really, really good to see. Now, I do think maybe some of their their shot selection. I don't think they'd probably be happy with it themselves. Probably too many wides when they go and face Galway in the semi-final. But again, a really good workout for them too.
You mentioned Orla Cronin there, and I thought Roisin Hard played a very similar role to her, like superb as well. Lots of possessions, linking up well. She really kind of, I know she's been around a while, but it felt like she really made a huge impact.
Yeah, and I think for me, it's great to see maybe Orla getting those headlines now, because I've seen it for years and years what she can do. But I suppose when you have other maybe better known players around you, she probably drifted into the background a little bit. But her movement and her distribution, I think in the first half, you know, ball came down the wing, one touch into the hand. Like, these are the things that you want to see from Orla, because we see it every day at training. Her distribution, I think so many scores came off of her. For me, she was definitely up there for player of the match. And then the same for Roisin, the same for Tipperary. I think their half forward line, I suppose, were the catalyst for a huge amount of not just their own scores, but I have to say, for a huge amount of Tipperary's turnovers. And to see when you're playing in defence and you see your forwards working that hard to turn over that ball, or at the very least to slow it down to give you a bit of a chance to restructure and get yourself set again, it's a massive boost for everybody.
Well, Aoife, I think it's fair to say that we have two cracking semi-finals coming up in the Camogie as well, just like the football, and we'll have plenty to talk about over the next little while. Aoife Murray, thanks so much for joining us.
No problem, thank you.
Tonica, have we a competition winner?
We do. We have a competition winner. The correct answer was Stephen Kenny, who is managing the Republic of Ireland soccer team against Bulgaria tonight. And the winner is John Friel from Mitchelstown in Cork. Go on, the Rebels. Another good win for us.
Absolutely. Well, that's all we have time for tonight. A really busy show, as they always are these days,
yeah,
because there's so much going on. But we're coming back tomorrow. That's the good news. We're going to be talking about Bloody Sunday with Michael Foley. John Hayes, you might know him, Tonica.
He bawled his eyes out in Crow Park.
You might just ask him about that. And we've Lauren McGee as well, the Dublin footballer. So we're going to chat to her about her season so far. Tara Stewart is up next.